This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is hour number two of the Lombardi Line as we welcome you back downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studio. I'm Ben Wilson, Michael Lombardi from the East Coast. Excited to welcome in Von Dalzell to the show this hour. Michael, coming up in about a half hour. Von, outstanding sports betting analyst for NBC. Von's in town here in Vegas, so we're making him get up early, Michael. You know what it's like when you're used to that East Coast schedule, then you wake up early here. We're like, all right, Von, you're having fun. Get out of bed. Come on, hang out with us in the studio. So he's doing that here in a half hour. Excited to get some college football breakdowns with Von. Big thanks to Justin Emery, our producer today. Great crew as well with Andrew, our technical director. Got JB Aramis all behind the scenes here at our Circus Sportsbook studio. A lot of preseason, though, you broke down and watched yesterday, Michael. And what is on your mind? Well, one of those preseason quarterback performances that left a lot to be desired, even though there wasn't a whole lot of sample size behind it. But we go to Pittsburgh, where this kind of rocky quarterback battle continues between Russell Wilson and Justin Fields.
Well, I think this was a serious game. I think both coaches approached this game as, okay, we need to get our guys ready to go. I think we saw Kansas City was ready to go. They're trying to get their guys. I think Buffalo was the same thing. Now, obviously, no J.J. Watt on Pittsburgh's defense, but Pittsburgh's offensive line was out there trying, and they were trying to get some rhythm with their quarterback, and that rhythm never showed up. And I think, to me, when you watch Russell Wilson, his eye level has continued to be down. He has all the traits of an older player who's declining and has been declining. And so he goes out there, he throws 10 passes, he gets sacked three times. You know, he doesn't look good. He doesn't look confident. Now, it's not all his fault, right? He didn't have very good protection. Long pass was 12 yards, not good enough. So, but with all that being said, Ben, you're a statistical guy. His QBR was rated better than Justin Fields, who, you know, had 17 attempts for 92 yards. Now, what Fields did was run around. He had 8 carries for 42 yards. But Fields is the same guy we saw in Chicago. You know, he's going to make some good plays with his feet, not going to be consistent, stares down a receiver with him. Pittsburgh is a team I like. I love Arthur Smith. I think he's a really good offensive coach. But the issues at left tackle, the issues at right tackle, the issues at quarterback, to me, spell trouble. And I think when you break teams down, I don't care where you are, on what level, whether you're high school, whether you're college, you have to have tackles, you have to have a center, you have to have an X receiver, and you need a quarterback. You can find the other ones, right? You need three linemen, you need a receiver, you need a quarterback. And right now, Pittsburgh, even though they've drafted guys in the first round that tackle, they don't have tackles, they don't have a first-round quarterback, they don't have a quarterback playing well, and their X receiver is a good player, but it can't get them the football because they don't have a quarterback.
For a team that has gone 31-11 in one-score games the last 4 years, yeah, at a certain point, you expect that to come back down to earth, the regression of the mean, and to overcome that, we've seen Mike Tomlin basically put his team, even with subpar quarterback play, in positions where the defense has the ability to win them those games by keeping it within one score, getting the late mistake, yet, you know, and now you watch Russell Wilson and you figure Justin Fields is going to be used a lot, whether it's in a starter's role or in certain, you know, packages for Pittsburgh this year, Michael. But that's where it goes. Okay, how much are you really going to trust, you know, a guy in Wilson, especially early in the season, right? In a, you know, trusting a new system where he refused to trust what Sean Payton wanted him to do when you watch a lot of the film last year. How can you be really confident that that, you know, that close game record that Pittsburgh has been able to stay ahead of the regression of the mean for so long won't come back down to earth? That's what I keep coming back to with the Pittsburgh team that, you know, they've been getting by, but, you know, the more you watch Wilson, as much as we don't want to overreact to preseason, you always point out that there is stuff that you can take away that matters going forward. And I think we're seeing that right now with Wilson. It's not a team I'm super excited about. I'm just not going to fade him simply because it is Mike Tomlin, and we've seen what that guy's been able to do time and time again.
I think that's great strategy. I think, to me, look, I don't underestimate Coach Tomlin either. I think he's tremendous. And here's what I do know, and I learned this from the great Coach Belichick, is more games are lost than they're won. And I think Pittsburgh's the perfect example of that last year. For all the bad offenses, and look, we watched Kenny Pickett play in the preseason, Ben. He has nothing but backup quarterback written all over him, right? There's no chance he's a starter when you watch him in these preseason games. That he's in the right place at the right time in his career. Granted, he would have only caused more confusion in Pittsburgh, but he would have beaten out Wilson. I think he would have beaten out Wilson. I think Fields could beat out Wilson. I think Mike's sitting there looking at, what are we going to do? They've got nothing invested in Russell Wilson. But the reality of it is I do not want to go against Mike Tomlin. because they will play good defense. They will try to run the ball. Mike Tomlin will sit in his office and say, look, we can't do this. We're not going to do it. I'd rather punt than let this guy beat us. And that's why they won 10 games and they lose to New England and Arizona at home. And they still win 10 games. You're not getting me down the bet against Mike Tomlin Lane, I could tell you that.
I'm still stewing. I think it was, what, week five last year, that Baltimore game where, I mean, Baltimore outgains Pittsburgh like 3-1, completely dominate the game, but just made it was Lamar Jackson making a couple of just really bizarre, weirdly timed turnovers. Pittsburgh wins that game 17-10. Like, I think I'd laid four on the road with Baltimore, and you're just like, how are they not up by 21? And they end up losing the game. That's kind of been, you know, betting against Pittsburgh in a nutshell for the last several years under Tomlin, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's just he's got this knack. And I think what fans don't understand all the time, this is why we get enamored with offensive football, is when you can get off the field on third down. Think about this, Ben. You know, how good is Pittsburgh in terms of defensively? They never play from in front. I mean, they never play from in front. And they still they battle. They're battle tested. They play doubleheaders on most days in the games because they're always constantly playing. So I just think, to me, if I'm Omar Khan, I'm saying to myself, we need a quarterback badly. And I know we can't get one, so he has to rely on Mike Tomlin to say, this is how I'm going to manage the game.
I guess where I'm uneasy, too, about Pittsburgh this year, as much as like that strategy has worked to a T, and you just need the quarterback. You know, last year, Pittsburgh faced the fifth most number of snaps against backup QBs. They also gained the second most EPA last year from turnovers. You naturally look at a schedule that, based on their opposing team's win totals, is the toughest in the NFL. Is there any sort of unease with the defense when you look at that, Michael? Even though the personnel, I mean, especially across the front four with the guys they have to rush the quarterback, is still, you know, of the elite in the NFL. I wonder if a little bit of those defensive numbers got inflated, maybe just a touch based on the opposing competition they had last year.
Well, I mean, I think to me what teams take the approach against Pittsburgh, too, is we turn this over, we lose. You know, and so they're a little bit more cautious on how they want to play the game. They know that if they, you know, I think Pittsburgh has a chance to be really good. They finally have Patrick Queen. They have a Will linebacker, something that they wanted. I don't know if Peyton Wilson can be good enough to go in there to replace Landon Roberts, but I think they've tried to improve their secondary. It's a big year for Joey Porter. Dante Jackson's got to come through. They didn't have Minka Fitzpatrick for a lot of the season last year. Deshaun Elliott's a really good tackler. He'll come up and make play. He fits Pittsburgh perfectly. So with Highsmith and Watt, still Cameron Hayward's a good player. Yeah, and the one thing about this defensive unit, Ben, is they don't get discouraged. I mean, even when their offense goes three and out, they go right back out there, keep playing. They have a tough mentality, which is hard to instill in a team, but they do, and they're really good in that area. So I give Coach Tomlin a lot of credit. I don't want to bet him. I don't want to bet him on the under. I don't want to bet him on the over. I don't want to bet him on anything. I want to respect them, and I just want to watch it from the side. I think a no bet here is a great bet.
I'm with you. Yeah, and it's very telling, too. So much of the talk this week in the NFL, really the big storyline has been Atlanta, what they have done. You know, you go out, you bring in Justin Simmons from a free agency, who was a cap casualty in Denver. Keep in mind, Falcons did not add a single piece in free agency on defense all offseason until they added Simmons this week. You also had the trade of Matthew Judon from New England, fortifies the linebacker room. Yet money still's coming in on Pittsburgh, at least for week one. Maybe part of that is, like, you get the, you know, Raheem Morris' second go-around as a coach, first game now with Atlanta against Mike Tomlin, which is much more of a must-win for Pittsburgh when you think about the gauntlet of their schedule there, and you figure there's going to be about 30,000 terrible towels floating around Mercedes-Benz Stadium there. But Pittsburgh down to, you know, 2.5-point dogs, two at some offshores. Michael, to me, very, very telling about, you know, what we will at least see, as much as it's been ugly from the quarterback perspective in preseason, with how that team will look as we come out of the gates in week one.
Well, I don't know if anybody's buying into Atlanta. I mean, when Atlanta goes against a good defensive front, watch the tape. That's all I'll tell you. Watch the tape. They're supposed to be this elite team at tackle. That's not the case, right? And we don't know if Cousins can move around very well. We're not sure about that. You know, so I think, to me, this is going to be which run defense. Look, Matthew Judon's a good rusher. I didn't understand the Justin Simmons signing for them, you know, for Atlanta to give $8 million. And now you've got basically $20 million in a secondary and a free and a strong. You got Jesse Bates. Now you're putting Justin Simmons down at strong safety. You know, I wasn't sure about that. They drafted Richie Grant last year to play that in the second round. So, look, anything that Super Bowl winning general manager Terry Fontenot does, I'm always going to wonder, like, what are we doing here now? What's go? You know, it doesn't make any sense. Grady Jarrett's coming off an ACL. He's not the same player. Their best defensive lineman last year was Calais Campbell. He's in Miami, right? Judon gives them a really good player, but how is Judon going to fit into what they do remains to be seen. And I still think there's a lot of questions about the explosiveness of their offense, Ben. The two biggest plays last year were a screen pass to Jonnu Smith for 61 yards and a wheel route to Bijan Robinson for 65. Like, who makes explosive plays for them?
I mean, this team, everyone's pointing to the schedule, right? Easiest strength of schedule by opposing win totals this year.
I never buy that crap.
Atlanta had the second easiest strength of schedule last year. They were super healthy. They were top five injury luck. And they won seven games.
Like if Pittsburgh, just hypothetically, let's play this game. Say every quarterback on Pittsburgh's schedule that has the hardest schedule in the league is injured the week they're playing them. Is that a hard schedule?
Not exactly. No.
That's why you can't go into the schedule. It's like, who's playing quarterback for you? If I'm playing the Giants and I got Daniel Jones or I got Tommy DeVito, okay, that's probably a push. You know, the line's not moving that much. But if Patrick Mahomes isn't playing on Sunday and I got Carson Wentz, hello.
You're right. All of a sudden. Week one, as I said earlier, probably favorite play just on a side will be Minnesota. You can still get Minnesota +1 in New York in a couple books. As far as you know, I love my teasers, Michael. Pittsburgh getting 2.5 up to 8.5 week one, or you know, Mike, like that is going to be at the very minimum, you know, Atlanta by 3. It feels like, you know, best case scenario for the Falcons. The way Pittsburgh's going to play that game out, that's a spot you have to love for Pittsburgh, finding, you know, pairing him up with somebody you really like for week one. I'm getting excited. I'm talking myself into week one bets already here, Michael, which is what we love.
That's what we should be doing. I mean, that's because it's real.
I'm going to talk you into some college football futures, too, when we come back here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on the Lombardi Line, where we're already getting fired up about potential week one teaser legs, Michael. That's a sign. You know, we're coming up.
What would you tease it with? Like what would you go with? Would you take Cincy and go down?
You know what? Honestly, right now, there's enough books where I'm at in Vegas. You could still tease Minnesota up. You'd lay the extra 5 cents of juice to do a 6.5-point teaser week one. You get Minnesota up to 7.5. Take Pittsburgh up to 9. That's how that would be. I mean, that would be my favorite combo for week one. I mean, I love Minnesota outright anyway. As far as that week one game in New York, that would be the best one for me. Just looking at it, Michael. The other candidates, there's not a ton. I guess you could take Indy up. You get Indy as an 8-point home dog against Houston in a week one game.
How about the Rams? Why would you take them up to get to 9.5?
Yeah, that would be an option as well. And, you know, you could even make a case for Dallas catching 8 against Cleveland in what is a very tightly lined game. Those would be a couple spots I think that would make the most sense. I wouldn't hate it. It's dangerous to do this with how the Raiders quarterbacks have looked. But, I mean, for game one for Jim Harbaugh, so much change in L.A. Like, I wouldn't hate in a divisional game taking the Raiders all the way up. But that feels like you're getting a little bit too cute up to 9. Yeah. So, for me, it would be Minnesota.
How about Survivor? Where are you going with Survivor?
It's funny you mentioned that. And was on with Mike Palm yesterday. We were talking about the Minnesota Giants game for week one. I actually think it is a great zag. If you want to be, because I'm sort of a subscriber, Michael, you want to kind of game theory this if you go Survivor. Cincinnati is going to be the most heavily selected team. Right. I don't want to use them week
I'm
one.
I'm not touching Cincinnati.
No way. Yeah, don't want to touch them week
only
one.
Only the dead fish go with the flow. Yes. Remember that.
Only dead fish
go with the flow. So if you're going with the flow in Survivor, you could be a dead fish.
I just wrote that down, Mike. I'm going to tape that on my refrigerator when I get home. I'm tempted to go with Minnesota in Survivor. As much as people say, well, you can't use road teams or a new quarterback in a system. But Minnesota is very tempting for me to use in Survivor this year. Like, I don't want to touch. I don't really want to touch Chicago. Buffalo, as much as people are high on Arizona, there's been a lot of buzz in the offseason. It feels like the hype is a little bit ahead of what's actually on the field personnel-wise. Yeah. People are very, very sour on Buffalo. Like, what's that line 6.5 right now, Michael? What's that line
in
week 8?
Milano's injury really makes me worry about Buffalo, but they were fully engaged last night. You could see McDermott told his team, look, let's play this like a regular season game, and then I'll give you some time off, but next week and all that. You know, so... I would think, you know, I think Richardson scares people because of against Indy. I agree with you. If you had guts, I'd take Jim Harbaugh on his opening debut against the Raiders. But look, let's face it. The Raiders have done a good job of playing the Chargers. Now, everybody will say, well, there'll be a Raider crowd down there, which it will be. But I think Jim will get his team ready to go. The other team that I think you have to consider here, and I know nobody wants to bet Dennis Allen, but you know, I think New Orleans should be able to beat Carolina. Now, we got to see what New Orleans does today against San Francisco, just how they look offensively. But to me, they have a chance. They should beat Carolina, who hasn't even played their quarterback yet. And, yep. You know, we don't even know how good that's going to work out.
Yeah, that's four and a half or five. And those are usually non-teasable numbers. It's kind of a dead zone there, but you could make
about Survivor.
Survivor, you could make a very compelling case on that. If I power rated it, Michael, I'd probably say my, favorites, like I would put Buffalo, Minnesota, and Seattle, I would also throw in my top three. I mean, Seattle getting the gift of, back-to-back rookie quarterbacks to start for Mike McDonald. It's a big reason why I like McDonald in the Coach of the Year markets to get off to a good start. But you get Seattle five and a half. I mean, that to me would be a good angle as well. I love having the Survivor talk too. We've got I don't know if you've seen any of the previews here, Michael. We've got our Circa Quest for $9.2 million documentary coming out, all about the behind the scenes of last year's Circa Survivor, which is coming up. First episode airs on VSiN, our Twitter tomorrow, VSiN Live, VSiN.com/Survivor, as well as our YouTube TV stream tomorrow night, 9 Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time. I'm really excited to see how that that plays out. And I think if you got the stones, I think Minnesota is the most stones-based play, Michael, of week one, honestly, because it is a road team and a pick 'em, with Sam Darnold at quarterback in week one. That would be, I'd say, the most kind of out-of-the-box selection. That makes a lot of sense, honestly.
And a blitz-heavy defense against a quarterback that doesn't handle the blitz.
Absolutely, 100%. By the way, we just got a text from our guy, Will Hill. He tells me, hey, you can tease the Saints today, preseason against San Francisco, with Pitt or Indy week one. I love Will going with the cross week, the preseason to NFL regular season teaser. And New Orleans is taking some money today, Michael. It's a pick 'em. First of our two, we'll get both of the preseason previews here as we wrap up the show. But New Orleans and San Francisco today, I'm seeing a pick 'em, 38.5 the total. And a lot of question marks about how much will we see, starter wise, especially for San Francisco here. And that seems why we're getting that movement there toward the dog in New Orleans.
I don't think you're going to see very much of San Francisco starters with their offensive line certainly in question. That puts Purdy out of question. You don't have Trent Williams. You don't have Aaron Banks. You've got a bunch of moving parts. Last thing you want to do is – you're not going to play George Kittle in this environment. Last thing you want to do is put your – McCaffrey's not going to play. So, when you start to – when those guys aren't in the huddle, then Debo looks around and says, why am I in this huddle? So I think this is a backup game for San Francisco. We'll see what Brandon Allen can do, get some of their backup linemen, maybe some of the – I know Pearsall's still been hurt. I don't know where Cowling will be, their draft choices. So, I think that's going to be the modus operandi here in San Francisco. And Green Bay, Denver tonight, I think we have the same situation. I think Denver – the reason Denver's a 7-point favorite going into the game tonight is because Denver's going to run their offense. They'll have their first-team offensive line. Green Bay's probably not going to play anybody. And, Denver's going to try to play this like a real game because that's what Sean Payton wants to do.
Yeah, it's pretty on the Saint 49ers side, it's got to be – from if you're betting this preseason angle-wise tonight – the fact that the Niners had so many guys banged up and injured that they actually canceled a joint practice with the Saints. I mean, you don't see that too often. And there were, 33 guys who were held out, whether injury or precaution for San Francisco week one of the preseason. And that's why you've seen – I mean, the lines have gone all over. This at one point opened. Niners – some shops had the Niners laying, 2.5, 3. Books at one point had the Saints -3. It's kind of flipped back and forth, but – you're at a pick 'em right now, and if you're canceling joint practices, we've seen so many guys banged up for San Francisco. It does not lead me to believe that you're at the very least you're going to see like Will's suggestion of a teaser here for New Orleans. Like you're not going to see San Francisco in a runaway by any means in the game tonight.
Yeah, I think to me, these coaches that get into these games, the key element is that double zero at the end of the game.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm still just bitter.
But it depends on the approach. Like, if you're Sean McDermott, then you wanted to look good defensively. I mean, you could see Sean McDermott coaching. So that was an element. You watch Andy Reid and the Chiefs' offense. They wanted to get going. There's some teams, like, just get me out of here. Like, Cincy was very content to play their backups yesterday against the Bears. They had practice in the, they had to work between two teams. They're very content to do that. All right. And then they watched their backups and they feel good about their backups now.
Sure thing. Yeah. I'm so bitter about when I think Saints in San Francisco, I think of that 9-0 game where I think I had the Saints like plus 8.5, 9-0 from a couple years ago. That was like week 14, week 15, where Dalton goes into San Francisco. Like the Saints had the ball like 9 times inside the 9 or 40, couldn't score. Anyway, I hold on to grudges, Michael. I don't know why. I'm still bitter about
that. That's all right.
Dennis Allen, come on, man. Do something for me. Like, he's the only coach in NFL history who has coached for 5 years and has not gone over his win total one time. Like, how is that even possible? I don't know.
That's a good point. I mean, that's, you know, you don't want to go there. I mean, look, you know, and you combine that, and I know we wanted to talk college football in this block, but we got down the pro football role. You know, you combine Dennis Allen with the Ricky Fowler of the NFL at quarterback and Derek Carr, that's a bad combination, right? Carr plays great the last half of the season when it doesn't matter. And then when it matters against the Rams, when they're building some momentum on the road, he can't make a play. And then you turn around and, you know, the beginning of the season in the first four games, he throws two touchdown passes. They were in the red zone. I think they were the 8th best red zone team last year in football. And they finished 18th overall in scoring because the guy can't get the ball in the end zone. Now, yeah. A lot of that, too, is Kamara. And Kamara left camp the other day. We're seeing his numbers go way down. And I think we're going to see a changing of the guard at the running back position there. Miller's going to come in and, I think, take over that position.
Sorry, Ricky Fowler. We didn't mean to loop you into that, but, you know.
No, we didn't mean to say it. I have no problem saying it.
I know, Ricky, you don't. Poor Ricky.
Ricky, I mean, it's Ricky's career. It's not my – I mean, Ricky just hasn't been able to play. He plays good. You know, Thursday of the Masters, he shoots 75. That means Friday he could shoot 62. He's got enough ability to win. He just can't do it when it counts the most.
Dennis Allen is a favorite, 38% against the spread. Derek Carr is a favorite, 33% against the spread.
That's a bad combination.
That's all you need to know about that.
You get those two in a room together. Yeah. I mean, that's not good. That's like having the Penguin and the Joker in the same room, right? Yes, it's not going to work out for Batman.
We did not get any college football this block. Don't worry. We will, though, to close the show. For more college football and for NFL breakdowns, we encourage you. We have both the NFL and college football guides out right now. Special offer. You can become a VSiN Pro subscriber for $175. $175 gets you full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl, as you can dive into both of our guides and gets you an opportunity there to really be ahead of the curve with all of our betting tools, trends, and tips you need to crush your bets. VSiN.com/subscribe right now. When we come back, Von Dalzell from NBC Sports Betting Analyst joins us to break down his favorite college football futures in 2024. We continue to roll on here on the Lombardi Line from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studio with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson. What a treat, Michael. We're about to have our guy Von Dalzell. He's in studio with me. I said he woke up early, but I mean, you know this, Michael. You're on East Coast time. It's almost noon there. So I mean, yeah. I don't know what I'm talking about, really, honestly. Hey, Von, what's up, man?
Doing well. I appreciate you guys having me. Yeah, Vegas has been good so far. I got an Airbnb last night, and it was nothing like I expected.
Oh yeah.
So I was up till 3 a.m. West Coast, or this time, so 6 a.m. East Coast. So
you look fresh,
yeah,
man.
Still made it. Thank you. Yeah, feel good.
I mean, Michael, you talk all the time, Michael. You're like, you know, you come out here for like Super Bowl week, and you're all of a sudden you're doing Lombardi Line. You're like, whoa, I got to be up at like 5 a.m. What's going on here?
Yeah, this is a little different story when you do it out there. But look, it's all good. It's good to have you. We appreciate it, Von.
Yeah, no doubt. Von, it's great work. NBC Sports betting content. And now you get the Big Ten package on NBC. Yeah. So, which, you know, started in earnest some games last year, but we'll get a lot of Big Ten action. I want to break down some of the Big Ten college football teams this year with you, Von. Follow him at B-Money Sports, by the way. One team that has been talked about a ton about the fall-off potentially this year, it's Michigan, and where to go with the Wolverines. I'll start there and then kind of go up with some of these teams. There's a bunch of, you know, big-name programs at the top of the conference, Von, but what do you make of, you know, a Michigan team that's seen the win total take some under money in the market, a lot of 9.5s that open. We're down to 9s for the most part. What do you expect here? You know, year one for Sharon Moore with massive shoes to fill in a multitude of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I was the go blue, the big blue guy all last year, but not this year. I had a feeling you were going to go here with the first play, but I think the under 9.5 is a good bet. That's what I already played. I think 9's a good bet. When you look at their schedule, which you see on the screen, it's rigorous. The first five games, Yes, they're at home. That definitely helps them out in a lot of ways. But that road schedule is nothing that I like for them. Washington, Illinois back-to-back is going to be tough going across the country for that game. And you get your rival Michigan State. Then Oregon, possibly the biggest game before you have Ohio State there at the end with two games that you should win. But by all accounts, Texas, Oregon, and Ohio State, one of those three games would have to be wins, and Michigan could not slip up the rest of the season. Honestly, we made tons of money on them last year, taking their opponent's team total unders, but this is a totally different team compared to last year. And all the skepticism of cheating scandals, I'm sure that'll come to play this year too. So it's an underplay for me.
Let's talk about another Big Ten team that I'm fascinated with Dominic Raiola, the quarterback, Nebraska. What do you think of their win total, and how serious can they be a player in the Big Ten this year?
Yeah, Nebraska's a team that should only get better. I mean, since Matt Rhule came in, they've been one of the teams that we like to watch consistently, and we like to also make fun of because they have those mind-boggling moments. But as a team, they've consistently been getting better, especially defense, getting some playmakers. And that quarterback position, as you said, is definitely something that I'm interested to see how it pans out. But we look at this win schedule, or this schedule and win total of 7.5. There's some tough games. I mean, going to USC, Iowa, Ohio State, those are all games that I have to probably mark up as losses. I'm real big on the Hawkeyes this year. But the beginning of that schedule, I mean, there's potential for this team to go 5-1, 5-0 to start. The Colorado game's a big one. So I would take the over. I wouldn't feel great about it because it is Nebraska still, but I would take the over.
Hey, Mini Mahomes, the quarterback. I mean,
yeah. Oh, man, that's what
Michael,
we're doing now.
Michael loves Raiola. He dressed it up exactly like Mahomes.
Oh, I mean, no.
Like, what could possibly go wrong there? Nebraska's 7.5.
I agree with everything Vaughn said. I mean, they have to prove they're better on defense. I'm not sure SC, and maybe I'll follow up with a question, is I think SC is more paper than they are Tiger. I think Lincoln Riley is really more on a, like, can you show up here and show us you're a great coach? We gave you an $18 million home on the hill looking over the Pacific Ocean. I think there's more pressure in SC than most people suspect.
Yeah, I think USC doesn't have a beautiful schedule either. But when you look at their defense, I don't think their defense will be much better. Like when they play LSU week one, LSU team total, I don't care what it is, I'm going over. Hoping it's a 34.5 or 35.5, but five touchdowns on the USC defense is something LSU's offense should likely do here. And when I look at USC, I mean, they get the transfer running backs, the transfer receivers. They get better in those areas, but they will be traveling across the country for conference games. That's not easy. You got at Michigan, back home against Wisconsin, at Minnesota, back home against Penn State, at Maryland, and it just keeps going. This is a terrible schedule for USC, so yeah, under 7 is absolutely a play. If you're getting plus money like you are here, absolutely play that.
I'm thinking, Vaughn, just doing the math here, because LSU, they come out to LSU-USC Allegiant Stadium Sunday of Labor Day, September 1st. That's LSU -6 pretty much painted, 63.5 your total, which means you're likely going to see 34.5 team total.
That's
LSU, you'd want, yeah, go over on that? Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, five touchdowns. I mean, last year when you looked at USC's defense, I believe it was 10 or 11 games, they allowed 27 points. And what's one more touchdown against LSU, a team that's going to get better, has Neusmeyer quarterback and a lot of talent there from the transfer portal.
Not like LSU's defense much to write home about either. You could easily see a shootout. I mean, in that game, both teams could certainly clear that. Talking Big Ten right now with Von Dalzell. I'm fascinated, too, about not only USC, but these other teams coming in. You know, Michael, I mean, you think about, too, just the transition, right? UCLA has been hammered to the under in the betting market for a multitude of reasons. Wasn't the best press conference of all time at Big Ten Media Days for Deshaun Foster. But it's more, you know, the travel, right? Seeing these teams for the first time. You know, Washington is in complete transition when you lose Kalen DeBoer going to Alabama. You bring in Jed Fish. So you have a total overhaul of the roster. And now you have this newfound schedule. You know, what do you make of a Husky team that was very, very popular, great to bet on the last couple of years?
Yeah.
Now it's sort of anybody's guess. Like, I'm lukewarm. I don't really know what to expect out of the Huskies.
I mean, easiest way to break it down, I guess, is TCU 2.0. I mean, I think we're going to see them in a similar position to them where they kind of fall off. You know, they're still a competitive team in a lot of games, but the travel schedule is going to be far too much for the Huskies. And I think when you look at the schedule, I mean, it breaks down to a situation where it's going to be hard to find 7 wins for Washington this year. And they have a totally different team. We're talking about a quarterback change. We're talking about receivers are gone. We're talking about the best O-line in college football last year is gone. Almost every guy. So, there's not many things to brag home about here, but it's a similar spot where you talk about at Rutgers, home against Michigan, at Iowa, at Indiana, back home against SC, at Penn State. I mean, this is just a terrible schedule for a team that's suffering from so much transition right now. So it's got to be an underplay for me, 100%.
How about Oregon? We didn't talk about Oregon or Ohio State. You know, where do you lean against both? The both those teams universally seem to be the two best teams, not only in the Big Ten, but in the country. Where do you lean? They potentially could play three times. Where do you lean if for each one?
I didn't even think about the potential of three games between those two, but let's make it happen. I want to see that. I think Ohio State, though,
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it really would be. I mean, it could happen. I doubt it, but Ohio State, to me, should be the best team in the country. I have them over 10.5 wins. I have them to go undefeated. I have them to win the national championship. So I am loaded up on the Buckeyes, transitioning from go blue to go red or go scarlet and gray, whatever they're saying down there. I have to learn the lingo now since I'm an Ohio State guy.
But you're going to clearly help Ryan Day, you know, prevention of the gray hair, because it is quite the stressful year for Ryan Day this year.
I mean, they got their quarterback now, though, Will Howard. He's got a bunch of starts, 28 starts, I believe, underneath his belt. He's a dual threat guy, too. They needed that. They didn't know their quarterback till really week three, week four last year. That was a big problem for the Buckeyes. They were going into training camp not knowing who their guy would be. This year, they know everything. And they got the transporter really well. I love the running back Judkins from Ole Miss. I think he's a sleeper at 100-1 to win the Heisman. Wouldn't go crazy on it. It's more of a sprinkle. But I do think Ohio State's schedule sets up very, very well for them to go 11 wins or go undefeated. And I think they should be the national championship favorite. So Oregon, a great team as well, but I'd put my money on Ohio State over
Vaughn Dalzell in on Ohio State. You can find Vaughn at V-Money Sports, outstanding NBC Sports betting analyst. We've been doing, Michael, our favorite win totals here on the show over the last couple weeks. My favorite win total, Vaughn, in the Big Ten, Illinois under 5.5. That was mine. I got -110 juice. That's gotten a little juicier now. Brett Bielema is known as a trench guy, and the offensive line gave up 40 sacks last year.
Yeah.
Defense, all but three games, they allowed 100-plus rushing yards, and I don't know why they decided to bring Luke Altmyer back at quarterback, but this guy's a bottom end, a Big Ten QB, you know, 10 picks and 8 starts, gets benched a season ago. I don't see it for Illinois. I know the schedule's not all that tough, but I'm not a believer in general.
I agree. I was going to say the schedule for them. I mean, if they make it to 6 wins, it might be because of the schedule. But to be honest with you, I don't see it either. The talent pool has dropped off so much for Illinois over the past few years. And, I mean, when Chase Brown left, that was pretty much it for that offense. But the defense, too, has taken a big step back. So I don't see much belief in Brett Bielema's squad. I love this guy 2 years ago. I love this team. But now I'm starting to think the transition with all these new teams coming in makes Illinois one of the bottom
favorites
in the Big Ten.
What about my Rutgers, Scarlet Knights? What do you think? What do you think the chance of them going over their total?
What's their win total? What do you guys got?
6.5. I've seen a slight over juice there. Look, schedule is Charmin soft, but
yeah, that's. I see people taking them at 7-1 odds, 6-1 odds to win 10+ games. You know, I would never do that. But you know, if you're getting 8+ for, you know, +150 or 200 wins on certain sports books, I would take a look at that for Rutgers, because I think that defense is going to be right along up there with, you know, the Iowas, the Penn State, Ohio States as one of the best defenses in the Big Ten. But it's the offense that's always the issue for Rutgers. Their special teams got better, but the offensive line and the quarterback position will be two areas I think Rutgers will have to make or break this year. So I wouldn't talk you off the over.
I think it's a good strategy too. A team like a Rutgers, where, you know, if things can click for Cal McManus, who has left a lot to be desired,
yeah,
to say the least, in his time in the Big Ten. But if that clicks, now you're looking at a team that could have a very, very high ceiling. It's a team with the second most returning production in the Big Ten. So I like it.
Yeah, I like where you're coming from.
Vaughn Dalzell, kind enough to join us in studio here.
Thanks, Vaughn.
At Circa. Vaughn, thanks so much for the time, man. Appreciate it.
You guys. Have a great day. Best of luck, everyone.
Does great work for NBC Sports, contributor for us, especially on a lot of our live betting weekend shows as well. Can't thank Vaughn enough for stopping by. When we come back, our final college football win total thoughts, last breakdowns of the NFL preseason. 2 more games here to wrap up the Week 2 slate. We'll talk about it next. Back for the final time here on the Lombardi Line. A big thanks to our guest today, Tim Murray from VSiN Primetime, Vaughn Dalzell, NBC Sports betting analyst, for joining us on the show. And a big thanks of you to watching around the country, Marquee Sports Network in Chicago, Masson in the DMV, as well as Nesson in Boston. Always, you know, I was in Boston Airport a few weeks ago, Michael, and just walking through the airport, and we had VSiN on, watching some weekend Lombardi Line. Always love whenever we're
good
on. It is very, very nice.
Been great to always been on there. Been there for a while. They've always had us, which is great. So appreciate it.
You can check us out at VSiN.com, YouTube TV, also on the iHeartRadio app from the radio side. Michael, you'll have a fresh pod with Femi recording bright and early tomorrow morning for the GM
talk
Shuffle.
Talk about that one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Well, we got 2 more preseason games tonight here for the rest of NFL Week 2 preseason. There's also all the favorite podcast platforms we've got, whether it's Apple, Spotify, all that great stuff that we have how you can access us here on VSiN. So the two more preseason games tonight to watch. We're not going to see much on the Packer side. I was joking with you off the air as a Packer fan. I'm just trying to mentally prepare myself to watch 2.5 hours of Sean Clifford. A lot of Sean Clifford tonight. No Jordan Love. That line opened Denver -3.5. It's now up to 7 with no Love. Likely no Packer starters playing here. And it's been pretty ugly so far for Packer backups in the preseason. There's been some talk that it really could be a legit battle between Clifford and Michael Pratt, the Tulane rookie, for that backup job. Issue is Pratt's been banged up a little bit. So I don't know how much you're looking to take away, as much as we are likely to see a good deal of Bo Nix here in that preseason race for the Denver Broncos. But all indications are that Nix far and away is going to be the week one starter.
Well, I think if you're a Packer fan, the first thing you got to look at is your offensive line, right? Jordan Morgan's been hurt. Is he going to play at right guard tonight? If they don't play him, now we get a chance to look at all the backups. And I think that's going to be the key. Can Andre Dillard come in and do anything? Remember, Tennessee signed him. He's a first-round pick out of Philadelphia. Got beat out by a seventh-round pick, Jordan Mulata, and has really never played. When he started for Tennessee last year, it wasn't good enough. Can he be the swing tackle for this team? You know, and so I think that the offensive line configuration for Green Bay is really important, because when you watch them in a game, like when you watch them against Dallas, you watch them against San Francisco, they pass protect well, but can they do the things they need to do on a consistent basis in the run game? I think that's really going to be important. So for me, this is a game about their backup offensive line. And then defensively, you know, look, they've got some talented players in the defensive front, no question. But I think you have to kind of look and see, do they have where their depth's coming from, especially at linebacker. I'm anxious to see Cooper, the Texas A&M kid, to see how he plays. And Hopper, who they drafted in the third. They got two linebackers they spent a second and third round pick on. I can't wait. Plus, it's going to be interesting in what Sean Payton does. Does he kick the ball to Nixon? See, I would never kick the ball to Nixon in the way this is set up here. He's too good. And I think he'll make a huge difference for them. And as you know, as a Packer fan, Ben, the Carlson kid, you lived through struggles. You want to see him take that mother may I step forward. I know you got Greg Joseph there as the backup, as a kicker, but you want to see Carlson win this job.
You do. Hey, Carlson did not miss in preseason week one. It was a bunch of shorter kicks, though, and that is a very big-time competition going on in Green Bay. You go to the offensive line, though, Michael. I mean, it's a team that was in the top 10 as far as total games lost due to injury. And it was a big reason why Green Bay had 5 games last year. 5 times Green Bay had the ball with 2 minutes or less and a chance to win the game, and they lost. You can't obviously put that all in the offensive line. There was a lot. That was a lot during the early portion season when Jordan Love was very much a struggling young quarterback. But you know, you think about what happens. Okay, if you're down to backups on the offensive line, it's the final 2 minutes. Teams are going to bring the house. They're going to force a younger quarterback into Jordan Love to, you know, beat them over the top, making very quick decisions. That will be it's a very underrated part of what will help Jordan Love continue his ascent as a guy who finished in the top 3 in a lot of advanced metrics in the second half of the year a season ago.
Yeah, I think that, look, I think one of the things you always have to do is take a look at the last 8 minutes of every game. You know, 2 years ago, the Houston Texans were really good for 50 minutes. I mean, they had the Giants when the Giants were a playoff team. They had a chance. Now, Davis Mills was playing quarterback, but they have a chance to beat the Giants. They turned the ball over on almost every possession in the second half. So I think, to me, when you have to run the ball and you can run the ball, you're good. When you have to throw it and you can throw it, you're good. And I think last year, Green Bay at times in these close games wasn't good in that offensive line. So that's why I like the Morgan pick. I like Morgan at left tackle. I don't like Morgan at guard. I think he's more – I've watched him a lot of Arizona. I think he's more of a tackle than he is a guard, but we'll see. But he was hurt his shoulder, so I don't know how much he's going to play tonight, if he plays at all.
My perspective, as far as the O-line, the fact that David Bakhtiari, as great of a player as he once was, his injury situation, it kind of felt, Michael, like just this cloud hanging over everything. And it was really hard to feel like there was a defined role on the O-line when you kept waiting. All right, when is Bakhtiari coming back? How healthy will he be? How long can he stay in the lineup? I don't know how you feel about, you know, how that changes the dynamic. But when you have the anchor of your O-line who is so up in the air with his injury status, I feel like that really hurts your cohesion as an O-line. It was a big reason why the Packers struggled to find consistency last season in that regard. Like, to me, just moving on from Bakhtiari, as much as it hurts for as good as he was at a time in his career, like I look at that as a net positive going forward, where you can at least sit there and say, okay, we know exactly how we're going to start things from day one here as far as defined roles go.
Yeah, I agree with that, Ben. I think like Tyron Smith for the Cowboys, they did the same thing. At some point, you just say, look, I'm tired of not counting on this guy. Now Baltimore has gone the other way with Ronnie Stanley. They can't count on Ronnie Stanley. He's played like in 33 games in the last 3 years, but they keep going back to him. They've lowered his salary, but it's very annoying as a general manager because you on the depth chart, boy, this guy looks like he's going to be – we're good. But then he never plays. Durability and reliability are so damn important. And I think that ultimately causes concern. And you're right about Bakar. But he was still, of all the things, though, he was still their best lineman.
He was, yep. And it's not like you just all of a sudden say, okay, well, we're going to be fine without him. It's just makes it a little bit more simpler on paper when you are scheming and you are putting together that line to say, okay, well, we know Bakhtiari is not part of the picture because there's no more question marks as far as the injury. That a huge underrated storyline for the Packers in 2024. Been a good show though, Michael, as far as some best bets, like Pittsburgh teaser leg up to 8.5 week one. Pair that with Minnesota, still get them plus one out there in some shops. Pair them with some other favorites, some survivor thoughts as well. I really like that. We want to throw one more. Are you ready for a college football game of the year bet, Michael? Can I indulge you here? I know you are very high on Kentucky this year, and that's a team I'm looking to bet on here in the game of the year market. We talked ACC earlier in the show, and I'm looking to fade one of those teams in kind of that top echelon of the league. In Louisville, which is the end of the year game between Kentucky and Louisville, I really like where Kentucky is going to be at the end of the year. I mean, you bring in Brock Vandergriff, transfer from Georgia, who was a backup there. You get a new running back, Tripp Trayanum from Ohio State, has to replace Ray Davis, their do-it-all art running back from a season ago. But, you know, the meat and potatoes, right? Like the lines for Kentucky on the interior, both offense and defense, are really solid under Mark Stoops. Tons of NFL prospects littering both sides of the ball. I expect by the time we get to late November, Michael, and you get the new quarterback, the running back, all the pieces integrated, this will be a Kentucky team that finishes the year really, really strong. And Louisville, on the other side, has to finish the year. Six of their final eight games are on the road. And you're talking about a new quarterback in Tyler Shuck, who has never stayed healthy an entire season. I mean, he's been injured at Oregon, was never healthy at all at Texas Tech. I have a lot of doubts about the Shuck experiment coming in this year, replacing Jack Plummer in Louisville, to put it kindly. And I found a book at Caesars right now. You can get Kentucky plus one. Like, I wouldn't be stunned if by the time we get to the end of November, Kentucky's laying over a field goal at home in a rivalry that they have owned over the past half decade.
You know, but the only thing I would say is what worries me about Kentucky and why Kentucky and Missouri and some of those second-level Southeast Conference teams can't really challenge the top of the list is the depth. And I think when you bet something in the future, you're counting on the depth to be there. Now, at the end of the year, guys get hurt during the season. They'll be stronger at the end of the year. But the one thing that I would push back a little bit on would be the fact that, are you sure they're going to be the same team in November as you're picturing today? Because the battle and the rigors that they go through the season wear down on you.
That's always,
and they take
fair.
Away yeah. your depth. And that's the only – that would be the only concern I would have.
Right.
I would say, to me, you know, I like your logic, and I agree with you on the quarterbacks. I think, to me, I like Kentucky's team. I think Mark does a great job of making them tough, getting them physical. But for me, the most part is that I just worry about their overall – the wear and tear of playing the schedule that they have to play in the Southeast Conference.
That's very fair. And it's why I didn't want to go all in, say, like on a win total, in over 6.5 for Kentucky, which some people are betting this year. I trust Mark Stoops. I mean, the guy's gone over 500, seven of the last 8 years. They get 18 returning starters, 10 on defense. So there, you know, there's been experience of guys going through the gauntlet of an SEC season. And, you know, you talk about depth, too, at the end of the year. That's kind of why I thought this was the perfect way, you know, to back a team in a single game, Michael, without having to invest full season.
Yeah.
Because, again, Louisville, it's the sixth road game in eight, and they've always struggled in this rivalry.
Too.
They could be
they
banged
could
up as well.
Too. Yeah. Yeah, they could be banged up, too. You just never know.
Well, you know, Vaughn was talking.
Your crystal ball. You're playing the crystal ball betting. I kind of like it. Crystal ball betting. That's
I like it. That is good. Well, like TCU 2.0, Vaughn said that earlier in the show. I mean, Louisville was awesome last year. That could be another case this year where Louisville takes a step back.
Yeah, that's the one thing with this transfer portal. We'll never know year to year.
You were very right on that. Always great hanging out with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson. We wrap things up on the Lombardi Line with The Handle coming your way next.